And nevertheless, they sent him out to see Adi in Abhidnagar. And Adi was, you know, very surprised that this young man had come all this way and Sahavas had been canceled. And nevertheless, permitted him to drive a motor scooter out to Marizad. And one thing led to another, and Robert got to see Baba and described to him his trip and also described to him this whole business of drugs and the experimentation with drugs that was going on in the United States. And it was at that time that Baba took a powerful interest in drugs, said that they were a very serious problem and that they could destroy the intellectual potential of the United States and Western culture because of the young people indulging so much in drugs, wanted Robert Dreyfus to go directly back to the United States with that message, and so forth. So this was around Thanksgiving of 1965, and we received a postcard from him saying that he had met Baba. Very cryptic, didn't describe anything more than that, just had met Baba. And I thought, well, this is this changes the whole picture. Baba isn't in seclusion. He said he was going into seclusion. Nevertheless, this young man, who was a contemporary of mine, goes over to India and is permitted to see Baba. So even though Baba says, I am in seclusion, in fact, he does see people. So as I was mentioning, Baba is very, very shrewd, and he knows what motivates you, and he knows what makes you tick. My initial response to this was, well, this guy isn't any better than I am. I mean, he's the same age, and we have the same background, and he saw Baba. I mean, if Baba will see him, I mean, surely he can see me. You know, he's no more special than I am. So I immediately began to think, oh, well, how do you see Baba? I mean, you just arrive and knock on the door, or do you write, or, you know, what do you do? What are the formalities, or are there any? And so I wrote to Don Stevens, and I was at the time living in San Francisco, who I knew had just gotten back from India. And I also wrote to Sufism, and interesting that Don took the trouble to call my house. I had just gotten on the plane to go from Denver to New York and from New York to India. But I thought when I learned of this that it was incredible that someone would care so much to make a long distance call to my house. He'd never met me. All he got was a letter in the mail saying, you know, I'm going to India and I'd like to meet Baba. Could you tell me what to do? And I was very moved, and I finally got his letter when I was in India, and he basically said, well, you should write to Adi. You should tell him how you came to know about Baba and your desire to see Baba. Describe, give him a little background. And then lean on Adi's good graces. And he said that you can have no better champion of your hopes to meet Baba than Adi K. Rani. So I also got a letter from Carrie Harb, who at that time was working in the Sufism bookstore, and she wrote a letter. The Harbs had just gotten back from India. They had terrible health problems there. They had planned to live with Baba and the Mandali in India, but the health problems prevented that. They had just gotten back. But anyway, Carrie wrote me a letter and said, you know, you should also write to Adi. So that seemed clear. The consensus was write to Adi. So put that those letters in my suitcase, and I planned to write to Adi. So we got into India, and we were shipped out to our respective village locations. And I wasn't particularly happy with my work because it was very unstructured, and they had canceled the program that I had been trained for, and there were just a million India problems, Peace Corps problems, bureaucratic problems, and it was just a total disaster. But I wanted to see Baba. And at this time, this young woman and I were still close enough friends. I had asked her if she had wanted to see Baba, and she said yes, she would. So long about the end of January 1966, I wrote to Adi, and I gave him some background, how I had found out about Mir Baba, and that I was in India and was going to be in India for a couple of years, and I had a friend, and we would like to come and see Baba, and would this be possible? So I got a letter back very quickly, two or three days, which, given the India mails, is amazing. Adi said, your letter was transmitted to beloved Baba in his seclusion, and he asked me to communicate to you that he's very happy about your love, excuse me, and he's very pleased about your desire to see him, and would you please write back on February 10th? February 10th is the date of Baba's birthday by the Zoroastrian calendar, and therefore a special day to Baba. I didn't know that at the time. But I interpreted this as a test from the master. Now, my concept of masters and the way they tested their disciples was always something very severe, like, you want to see me? All right, you climb over the Himalayas, you fast for 40 days, you swim across the Red Sea, you fight barehanded with the barracudas, and then if you can do all that, I might see you. But here was a setup, you know, it was a gopher ball, and you just write a letter on the 10th, and that was it. So I thought, wow, this is easy. I mean, maybe this master's pretty easy, I don't know. So I very, very carefully deposited my letter on February 10th in the mailbox, and said, by all means, we'd still like to see Baba, and, you know, here's our itinerary and all this. And promptly again, got a letter back from Adi saying, Mayor Baba is pleased to see you. Then he said, you know, you should write during your vacation to set up dates. But he will see you when he is in Guruprasad. Remember that Baba lived at that time 9 months in the year at Marizad, and then he had 3 months in Pune at Guruprasad. And Baba said, I want to see you when I'm in Guruprasad. And for 5 minutes only. So when you're on vacation, you write to me, give me your available dates, and we'll set up a time. So I was ecstatic. But I think the thing that floored me the most was that Mayor Baba could say, you know, I'm pleased to see you. I mean, I was completely disillusioned about what I've been doing. I got, you know, no satisfaction or happiness from, you know, going to college, and it wasn't that I was a failure. I was successful in college and had done well according to college standards, just that it didn't make me happy. And as I projected the experience that I had in college through the rest of my life, I said, well, I can play the game for the rest of my life. I can do what is conventionally expected of me, and if my experience is anything analogous to what college has been, it will be a totally unhappy life. So it's pointless to go through that experience, I'm going to try to find something else. That was the state of mind in which I found myself. Unhappy, desperate, and seeking, hoping that Baba would be the answer, or something would be the answer. Another way of life would be the answer. In the back of my mind, thinking that he would probably be, you know, with a teacher in person. So the fact, I felt, you know, what do I have to offer? I don't have anything to offer. Just, you know, my unhappiness. What big. So I couldn't, of course, was pleased that Baba was willing to see me, but I was overwhelmed when Baba said that I am pleased to see you. So I couldn't believe that Baba would be pleased to see me. But I was knocked off my feet that he was. So, as it turned out, writing to Baba during our vacation was very impossible because we would be traveling around in train and wouldn't have any address and all that. So, we had to set up dates. And I think I wrote to Baba and explained that. I was, I was very concerned about writing Baba about this necessary change of plans, because I thought, oh, we've had a change of plans and we can't go through with the original schedule. Baba may change his mind, he won't see me. But there was nothing I could do, I had to do it. I now look back and see that in his compassion, Baba was just permitting me to write again and to have more contact with him. And that, you know, anyone who has been with Baba, I mean, I'm sure Phyllis could tell you countless stories where plans were changed innumerable times. It's typical Baba. I mean, you make a plan, looks like it's going to go through, has to be changed, have to set up something totally different. Well, this was nothing different, but I was new to Baba, and I didn't know that, so I was panicked that Baba would say, well, you can't write me during vacation. You've blown your chance, kid. Go home. But that was not the case. He said, all right, either you come on April 8 or April 15, at Guruprasad, and the address is 1 Bund Garden Road, or it was 24 Bund Garden Road, or whatever it was, and at 9 a.m. And write me a little in advance to tell me which of these dates you have chosen. So I had firm dates. I mean, I could see on one of those dates, so I was really happy about that. So as things turned out, my friend didn't want to see Baba, so it was just me. She decided that you know, she had other things to do, and really it was my motivation in seeing Bala that she was hooking into, and it really wasn't her desire to see Bala, and so she decided not to go. So I wrote a letter around about the 1st of April saying that I'd be coming alone, and I would be coming on April 15th because that was the most convenient for me. So there were all kinds of concerns that I had. One was I wanted to be punctual because in all of Adi's letters, he said, you know, you can see Baba for 5 minutes only at 9 a.m. sharp, and the only would be underlined and the sharp would be underlined. So I figured, you know, Baba runs a tight ship, and if you show up at 9:15, he's gone on to other things, and it's too bad. So I didn't want to blow it. And then, you know, the mechanics in India, you can't always plan your transportation because it's always breaking down. I was concerned that the trucks or the cabs or the planes or the trains would all screw up or something. So April 15th was a Friday, and I was in Delhi on Tuesday, and there were just a phenomenal set of circumstances that worked out so that I got to see Bala on time. I was innocent of how you got on Indian trains, and also the fact that that was marriage season, and the trains have been booked up for a long period of time, and you don't just walk down to the station and get a ticket. You might not get a ticket. Fortunately, I had a Sikh friend whose house I was staying at, and you know, he knew all the games at the railroad station, spoke all the necessary languages, knew how to elbow people and do all the right things, and he took me down the railroad station, and first they said no ticket, and then he said the right things to the right people, and they finally got me a ticket. So that got me from Delhi to Bombay, and I arrived very late in the evening in Bombay on Wednesday, which was April 13th. Got a place to stay, and then I went out to Pune on Thursday. And I arrived in Pune, I think, in the late afternoon. I didn't know where 24 Bun Garden Road was. I didn't know that there were any Baba lovers in Pune. I didn't know anything. I just went and got a hotel, and I was very concerned, well, physically, how do I get to this place? And I was concerned about waking up on time. I didn't have an alarm clock or anything like that, so I gave very clear instructions to the guy at the desk, you know, have somebody come wake me up at 5 o'clock. And so I was having dinner, and I was very concerned. I wanted to get a good night's sleep, and as often happened to me in India, a guy came up to the table and, hello, what are you doing and having a good time? You must be from States, you know, let's go out. Have a good time, we'll go to a movie, you come to my place, you meet my mother and my grandmother, they would like to see you. I said, no, I'm sorry, but I have to go back to my hotel. So I went back to the hotel and got in to bed very early, and I got up the next day at 5 o'clock, and just after I got up, the kid from the desk came and banged on my door, and so that was a double reminder I was up. So that was one problem taken care of. 5 o'clock, 9 o'clock is the magic hour, and then I went and got some breakfast, and then I had to figure out still how to get there. So I asked at the desk, and they said, well, get down to the railroad station and do this and do this. So I got to the railroad station in Pune, and I forgot what this and that was because I didn't see the directions very carefully. As those of you who have been to India know, there aren't always nice big street signs saying this is Bun Garden Road, and this is Guru Avenue, and this is Darshan Way. I saw this soldier, and he looked as if he knew what was going on, and he said, oh, is it Bun Garden Road? You go down that way, cross the bridge, and then take a left and a right, and you'll be right there. So I went across the bridge, and I still was lost, so I went into this little hotel, and there were all these pictures. There was Baba's picture, but there were pictures of every guru and saint and master that I'd ever heard of, and many that I had never heard of. I mean, this guy was a real collector, so. So he said, where do you want to go? And I said, I want to go to 24 Bun Garden Road. And he said, oh, that is Mir Baba's bungalow. I said, yes, I know. He said, well, is it the boy who will take you? So this kid who spoke only Marathi got out his bike, and we nodded at each other. And he walked his bike down the road, and I walked with him, and he took me to the gates of Guru Prasad. And then he smiled at me, got on his bike, and went back to the hotel. So there I was, completely alone, at the gates to God's house. And as soon as I walked in, the gates were open. No one was there that I could see. But as soon as I got inside those gates, I felt a peace and a spiritual presence that I had never experienced. It was a presence of complete acceptance and complete warmth and complete radiance, and what the Bible really describes as the peace that passes understanding, and at least as much as I've ever experienced of it. And there was such a peaceful and positive presence that it's just like stepping into a warm pool with a life jacket. You know nothing bad can happen to you, and it's going to be warm and wonderful and beautiful, and it's the answer to everything that you've been looking for, and it's home. It's the place that you've been longing for, and it's certainly the closest thing to heaven that I've ever experienced. So I walked in, and I was still a little bit bewildered. I didn't see anybody. Nobody came out to the gate to greet me, and there was a gardener kind of dusting things off over in the corner, but he wasn't interested in me, and so I just kind of kept walking and walking, and it was a lovely morning, and there was a little bit of breeze in the trees, and everything was perfect. The weather was perfect. The atmosphere was perfect. In my heart, I felt a tremendous relief and a joy of having come home, of being in a place that was all good and all peaceful and all accepting. And there were some things that were going through my mind. One was I had no idea what Baba was going to do or say to me or what he expected of me or anything like that. Another thing I was intensely curious about was, you know, what were the Mundali like? What would they do? What had living a life with Baba done to them? And if I was really going to be a follower of me or Baba, I mean, I'd come out like them, but what were they like? So... I first met Erich, and he came out, and Erich was, you know, Erich, he was, there was just such phenomenal, strong, warm love coming through him that it was obvious that there was no nonsense, that he was totally genuine. There was no put on, there was no, you know, often when you meet people, they're going through formalities. Hi, how are you? Welcome, you know, and there's a certain lack of genuineness because, you know, we have to lose a lot of selfishness before we can become completely genuine. And most of us are in that situation. We're somewhat formal and some go through the rituals of our society and somewhat genuine, but it's hard for us to give that complete genuineness to strangers. And Erich had that tremendous ability. It just flowed right through him. Just love that could not be questioned, could not be denied, could not be doubted. And I just felt, well, this man is the most genuine man I've ever met in my life. No pretense and completely genuine. And then I met Mani, and I had the same feeling about her and the love that she radiated and the spontaneity that she radiated. They were just overwhelming. And I said, well, that solves that question. If this is what Mayor Baba does to his people, sign me up. So, I have no qualms. This is better than anything I've ever seen. So that was taken care of. And then there was the problem. Well, this is all wonderful and it's beautiful, but what am I going to do? And, you know, what's Baba going to do? And I had a lot of ideas in my mind about what Baba was going to do. And I thought that he was going to come on very strong. And he was going to say, look, we got 5 minutes and I'm going to just lay it out for you. You know, here's where you are at. And here's what you have to do, and here's how you're going to do it. And I expect you to do it. Now, give me progress reports. So I was getting a little nervous about the test. It was I thought, you know, it was going to be pretty heavy, and I better be ready for it, gearing myself up. And so Erich showed me a nice photo album of the 65 Darshan for Easterners that was, you know, well, not too interesting for me because I was thinking, you know, what's Baba going to do? What's he going to look like? What's he going to say? You know, all this stuff was going on in my mind. And so then Erich came in. He'd gone out of the room, and he came back in, and he said, Baba has come, and he wants to see you. I mean, Erich was just 100% focused. That's what Baba wanted. Baba's the master. This is it. This is what we do. Baba wants you. Let's go. So I got up. We walked down the hall, and Baba was sitting in the little room to the side. Not the main meeting room of Guru Prasad, but there was a little room. Those of you who went to Darshan will remember it as that small room where they had the poster with the quotations from Hafiz and Baba's chair, and a small room to the side off the hall. That's where Baba met with the men only during the mornings, or during part of the morning. So we left our sandals there at the door. And on the way to this little room, Erich had told me, Baba, don't bow down to Baba's feet, don't touch his feet. Baba may embrace you, and if he does, that's fine, but don't go through any formalities with Baba. So I was greatly relieved. I didn't want to bow down or go through that because I didn't feel right about it. I didn't feel comfortable about it. I'd seen so many people in the villages and in places in India just going, some guy with ochre robes comes down the street and the villager, bows down, touches his feet, and I thought, it's so phony because I knew that a lot of these guys wandering around in ochre robes weren't anything special, and it just seemed like a dead ritual that had been hanging on for hundreds of years. So I didn't want to do that, and I was relieved that Erich told me, no, it's okay, you don't have to do this. So the door opened, and I thought we'd kind of go down a hall. I wasn't really prepared to see Baba right away, but in fact, Baba was sitting right there in his chair. As soon as the door opened, he looked at me directly, and I sort of hesitated, and I didn't know what to do. I started thinking, well, what do I do now? And Baba is such a master surgeon, spiritual surgeon, and psychologist that he begins his work immediately. I, of course, didn't know that, but in retrospect, I've been able to think about what Baba did and realize that in that 5 minutes or 10 minutes that I was with Baba, no time was wasted. Baba just pulled things out of me, one right after another, and started to work. And what Baba was working on there is, as soon as I looked at him and went through this whole process of thinking, well, what do I do and all this, Baba just went like that. And as soon as he went like that, a powerful magnetic pull just came toward Baba. And I just felt as if I were going in a kind of downstream toward Baba. And Baba embraced me and kissed me. And what Baba was doing was saying, when you are in the presence of your master, don't think. Don't hesitate. Don't go through all that mental garbage. Come, cut the nonsense. And he was working on that inner tendency I have always to think things over before I act. And Baba was saying that is not appropriate when you are where you want to be. There's nothing to think about and figure out. Come, go, be right there. The work began. Now, when I embraced Baba, Baba's body and embracing him was the most, I don't have a word for it. I would say it was the most divine experience that I've ever had, in the sense that Baba did not have an ordinary body. Baba's body seemed almost unconnected to his consciousness. It seemed like a puppet that was there that went through the motions that were directed by the master puppeteer that gave his gorgeous and beautiful gestures and smiled that radiant smile and gave out that gorgeous love, but was something that could be dispensed with, like a little handkerchief puppet or a little marionette or something, when it was no longer needed. There wasn't that sense of connection with the body and being anchored to the body. It's as if the body just sort of flowed through along with this very, very flowing consciousness. And that was another experience that I had with Baba, that the love that radiated through the room, and there was love in every nook and cranny of that room, in every stone and every breath of air, there was just solid love. And it wasn't coming from Baba, it was just all around. And that's another message, another way of teaching that Baba gave. This is like the love that he puts out is not connected with that body. You don't have to be hanging on to the body physically to experience the love that comes from Mayor Baba. And so coming into the room was like coming into Baba's embrace. But he embraced me and he kissed me. And I noticed around Baba a fragrance that I had never known before, never experienced. It was wonderful. It was gorgeous. And I wondered, well, what kind of, you know, cologne does Baba use? And I was told later that, in fact, Baba, at that period of his life, didn't even take baths, that his natural odor was so fragrant that, you know, it puts to shame perfumes and colognes and roses and anything that I've ever experienced. It was absolutely the most wonderful and the most fragrant thing that I've ever smelled. In fact, Mani, the last time I was in India, said that when Baba's dirty clothes were over and he would give them to her to wash, they were so fragrant. This is his soiled laundry. It was so fragrant that the first thing that she would do is take the dirty clothes and put them in her face, because the smell was so beautiful. And it was that way with me. And Baba's kiss was very light and very gentle, very, very beautiful. Baba wasted no time. I sat at his feet, and Erich sat, and immediately gorgeous flowing gestures started coming out from Baba. And Baba's first question is, did I know Richard Alpert? And there again, you know, Baba was working on me. I had known of Richard Alpert, although I had never known him personally, and I knew that he was a great apostle of LSD experimentation and so on and so forth. My first reaction was, well, who cares about Richard Alpert? I mean, this is my 5 minutes. If you want to... If you want to talk about Richard Alpert, you know, wait till I leave. I mean, you know. I mean, Alpert is nothing to me, so, and, you know, that's why I'm here, isn't it? So, but, you know, Baba was giving the interview, so I said no. I'd heard of Richard Alpert, but I didn't know him personally. So Baba said that he had just gotten a letter from Richard Alpert in which Alpert had said that he was not going to take drugs anymore. Baba said that made him very happy. And it was clear, just the way Baba talked, that he really loved this man, that he really had tremendous feeling for him, and particularly the fact that he had decided not to take drugs made him very, very happy. I later, maybe many years later, wrote a letter to Alpert protesting that he had put Adi down in the Be Here Now book as on the side of pro-drugs, when it was a complete distortion of the correspondence that had gone on. He admitted that. But he said that in reference to this particular letter that he doesn't remember writing it. So we just have different historical memories on that particular point. I distinctly remember Baba telling me that. And then Baba looked at me and he said, he went like this, don't take drugs. And Baba has many, many ways of working. And what was going on an inner level is that I had never mentioned drugs to Baba. And in fact, 9 or 10 months before this particular interview, I had stopped taking drugs. I had come to the conclusion, with help from other people, that drugs were counterproductive, that they would erode the willpower, and that they really had no spiritual usefulness, and to the contrary, so I decided that was it. So I thought that they're no longer an issue in my life. Why is this man bringing up the issue of drugs? Well, what Baba was showing me is that, just as Adi was saying last night, that Baba could recount a specific instance that happened to him many years ago and tell him who was there and exactly what happened and what he was thinking. Baba was saying the same thing to me. And instead of saying it, he was showing me. I know you took drugs. And I know you did. I know everything you've done. You are an open book to me. You are completely transparent. And although one can think about what it's like to have to be in the presence of someone who really does know every single thing you've ever done or thought, to have the experience of being in the presence of someone who really does know every single thing you've ever done or thought is really very shocking. And, my first reaction to this was, well, obviously you do know everything about me, but I'm not sure I want you to know everything about me. Forget about all this garbage. But in his great compassion, Baba was showing me a lot of things. One of the things that Baba was showing me is, I do know everything about you, and you don't have to be ashamed of it. because despite the fact that I know all the rotten stuff, as well as the good stuff, I love you, and I accept you, and I care about you, and I will never hurt you, and you can trust me. And in a fraction of a second, I had all those experiences. They weren't thoughts, they weren't discourses, they weren't lectures. I had that experience of knowing that Baba knows everything about me and will only use it for helping me, that he can never hurt me. So we went on. Then Baba said, did I have any communication with Robert Dreyfus before I came? And I said, no. And he had gotten back to the States after I had left, so we didn't really cross paths. And so I was thinking at this time, well, who cares about Robert Dreyfus? He was here, he had his interview, you know. Do we have to spend time talking about these other people? You know, they've had their day in the sun, and why must we talk about them? I mean, but wanted to talk about Robert Dreyfus, so we talked. And then Baba said, well, where's Diane? Where's the girl that I was with? So I thought, well, and this is ridiculous. I mean, he's just gone to the trouble of showing me that he's omniscient. He knows everything about me. So he didn't need to ask me that question. He knows. But even if he were just your ordinary man on the street, I wrote him a letter and I told him that Diane wasn't coming. Is he a short memory or what? I was getting upset, you know. I mean, we were just diddling around as far as I was concerned. I mean, I said, you know, Diana has gone back to her job, and Baba said, that's good. And it was apparent from what Baba said that he really loved her and he cared about her. But he said, you are the far more fortunate. And that, it was interesting that Baba would say that to me, because I had really felt as if I were very fortunate in being able to see Baba. Some of you baseball fans may remember that after Lou Gehrig stopped playing baseball, he developed what is now known as Lou Gehrig's disease, which makes the muscles deteriorate, and which is a fatal illness. But nevertheless, in the midst of this, they gave him a big reception at Yankee Stadium, and despite the fact that he was terminally ill, he got up in front of all the fans, and he said that he had had a wonderful life, and he considered himself the happiest man on the face of the earth, or the luckiest man on the face of the earth. And that phrase and that memory kept revolving around inside me when I was in India, and I felt that because I was going to see Baba, I was the luckiest man on the face of the earth. And Mani, when she saw me, said, you are very, very fortunate. And of course, I didn't know at the time that I was fortunate, because a lot of people would never be able to see Baba in the body. We just didn't think about it in those days that Baba would drop the body. Just thought that Darshan was around the corner. And I thought that I was lucky because I was seeing him then, and that anybody who sees Baba is lucky. Let's face it. But Baba said, you are the far more fortunate. So Baba's next question was, well, have you read Stay with God? Now, this made me even more irritated. Like, I've come 10,000 miles, I've fallen in love with Baba, I want to be his disciple, and he's asking me, do I know Richard Alpert? What happened to Robert Dreyfus? Where's Diane? Have I read Stay With God? I mean, I didn't need to come here for him to tell me, you know, did I read Stay With God? And I said, no, I hadn't read Stay With God. And then Baba had me turn around, and in the back of the room, there were some male Mandali, and Francis was among them. And he introduced me to Francis, and so he told me, you know, read Stay With God. Excuse me. And so, you know, we continued more or less in the same vein. Baba said, well, how did you sleep? So I had been concerned that I'd be, I said, well, pretty well, Baba. Then he said, well, what are your plans? And I said, well, I was getting the 3 o'clock train out of Pune and going back to Bombay, and then I was planning to go back to the United States because my Peace Corps thing wasn't working out. It was a complete disaster, and my purpose for coming to India had been served right there, and it was obviously India was over for me. I'd gotten what I had come to get. And so Baba approved of those plans to go back to the States, and he said, that's good. And he said, don't, he went like this, don't miss your train. And Baba's omniscience is so incredible. In the first place, I had been thinking, you know, gee, it would be really nice to hang around with the Mandali. Mani's nice, Erich is nice, and sure beats anything that I have going for me back in the States. And thinking it'd be great to hang around. Baba was showing me to forget it. You know, you have your work, your destiny, your karma, get on with it, and I have mine. This is your allotted time with me, and that's it, move on. And the second thing that Baba was doing is he was saying that punctuality is very important. I mean, a lot of people that I grew up with thought, well, you know, 9 o'clock means 9:30. If you get invited to a party, you know, you don't go at 9, you go at 9:30 or 10. And, you know, people used to criticize me for wanting to be punctual, and Baba was saying, no, that's not the way I am. When I say 9 o'clock, I mean 9 o'clock, and when you have a 3 o'clock train, you get on that train. And I've found that in life, that thinking of my work and a lot of things in terms of being punctual and in terms of time is very important to me. And Baba was just reinforcing that in my consciousness. And then the tone changed a little bit, and Baba said, well, do you have any questions? Now, at this time, I was completely flabbergasted. I thought, never thought that Baba would ask me if I had any questions for him. I thought that he would just lay everything out, and not as he had done it. So I said, no, Baba. And that, at that magic moment, my mind was a blank. And if Baba has given me one moment, of course, all the moments in that interview are precious, but I think if I'll remember one moment, it's that delicious moment in which there was nothing going on in my mind. I've never been able to experience anything so wonderful since then. But, you know, it just happened spontaneously and in his presence. There was nothing there, and it was wonderful. So then I said, well, I do have this poem I wrote for you. So I pulled out this poem, and I thought that I had wanted to give Baba something rather than just go there. And so I'd written a little poem, and as I remember it, it went something like, ignorance of you is despair, knowledge of you is hope, love of you is happiness, service to you is nobility, but obedience to you is bliss. And Baba said, oh, I like the last line the best. Really like the last line. So at that time, you know, Francis was cheering it up in the back. Here, you know, kid comes through, he's not so dumb after all. So then, you know, Baba had me stand up, and it was obvious that the interview was drawing to a close. I was feeling wonderful because Baba's love is so beautiful and gorgeous and fantastic, but I hadn't gotten any of the stuff that I thought I had come for. There was no laying my life out on the line. There was no explanation of the spiritual path. There was no detailed blueprint for getting back to God. I thought Baba was really going to do that, and he hadn't done it. As far as I could see, it was just chit-chat, and this is just completely turning me upside down. And so he had me stand up, and then he had Jal stand up next to me, and he said, he wanted Jal to show me around town, and the townspeople would think this would be really funny, because Baba said, you have nice height. And, you know, I was sort of groaning when Baba said that, because, you know, just the whole tone of it sounded like, you know, when I was a little kid, I used to walk in when my mother was having bridge parties at home, and the ladies would say, oh my, Mrs. McGrew, your boy is really growing up tall, isn't he? You know, I thought, oh no, you know, this can't be the avatar. My young man, you have nice height, you know, this isn't what I came for. So many years later, there is incredible profundity to everything that Baba did. It's just that I was so dumb, it took me many years to get a lot of the things that Baba was doing. What he was talking about is spiritual height, in addition to showing me how to be cheerful and find, you can always, Baba was saying, you can always find something nice about anybody, even if it's to say, well, you have, you know, it's a nice pair of pants, or you have nice height, or it's a nice hat. You know, it's an example of how to be positive and cheerful about other people. And it's also, Baba was saying, you know, Baba was talking about self-respect and pride in the good sense, not in the ego sense, that it's good to be proud of oneself and to have a lot of self-respect and, as they say, to stand tall. And that's what Baba was getting at. And then Francis beamed in from the back of the room. He said, well, Baba, that's the long and the short of it, you know, looking at me and John. To me, that, you know, that was sort of the ultimate, I mean. we'd had tea party conversation, and it was a little bit, we'd had chit-chat, and now corn. Baba made one more remark, which I think I love him for it. He said, well, you know, Jal is so short because his growth is stunted. And when Baba said that, I was appalled, because I thought, now, this is the height of sarcasm, because Baba's God, he made this guy small. Now he's belittling him. I mean, that is playing dirty. I mean, that is... And in his infinite wisdom, Baba was showing me a lot of things. I used to, and some people think I still am, very sarcastic. And in fact, in my high school yearbook, one of the girls who was impressed with this quality about me said, well, good luck to the boy with a mind like nitric acid. Baba was showing me two things about this quality of sarcasm. One is, he's saying, kid, you think you're sarcastic. I mean, you're small potatoes, kid. Because no one can do it like I can do it. And the second thing Baba was saying is, you know, when Baba made this crushing blast, at the same time there was a wave of love that went through the room that was just, you know, was just like stepping into the ocean, and just a wave comes at you and it just floods over you. There was this tremendous love. And Baba was saying, you know, I'm saying this about Jal, and I'm making fun of him and I'm having a joke at his expense, but at the same time I'm showing him and you how much I love him. And if you really do show people, and show it by your behavior and your manner, that you love them, you can get away with anything. It's not... The sarcasm is only harmful when you don't show people that you love them. Otherwise, it comes off as humor, which Baba demonstrated. In a way, Baba was showing, if you want to do it, this is how to do it. You know, you have to do it with a lot of love, and then it's acceptable. And at the same time, Baba was, instead of saying, well, Mr. McGrew, welcome to the family, he was saying, you know, here's a family joke, you know, here's our stunted little brother. And we, you know, this is a family joke, and we talk about it a lot. And we'll just include you in our family by sharing our family humor with you, instead of going through all this rigmarole of saying, oh, well, we consider you one of the family, welcome to the family. So on and so forth. So then the tone changed. You know, at this time, as I look back, Baba had been the complete mother god, the complete woman. And in many ways, that was the lesson that I learned through this romance that I'd had in the Peace Corps, that what I was really looking for was the perfect woman. The perfect woman is God. And he had shown himself to be the perfect woman. I had expected him to show himself as the perfect man, to be strong, authoritative, very clear in his directions, you know, the Zen master with love in his heart and fire on his tongue. But instead, Baba had showed me the other side, which, of course, he thought is the side that I needed to think about most and the side I needed to cultivate. He showed me the woman with compassion and love and sweetness and gentleness and tenderness and softness for the most of the interview, rather than the strong, authoritarian, heavy person that I had imagined that I would see in the space of 5 minutes. But, as we know, Baba is both mother and father, and at this point in the interview, Baba switched from the perfect woman to the perfect man. And there was a real feeling of phenomenal authority that radiated through Baba. And Baba looked at me, and without, you know, having authoritarian mannerisms, but having tremendous authority, Baba said, "What you are looking for is God." You know, and when he said that, there was no doubt about it. At the same time, I thought to myself, well, I didn't think I was looking for God. I thought I was looking for a master. And Baba said, "And you will not find God in this body." In other words, you know, what you're looking for is not hanging around with me in the body. You're trying to find God, he said, and you will find God in your own heart. So that was, of course, Baba's way of saying is, your destiny is not to be with me in the body, but to find God in your own heart. And then the second thing Baba said, the third thing Baba said, if you are true to the last line of your poem, which is obedience to me is bliss, you will one day see me as I really am. Now, when Baba said that, there was no doubt about it. And it was very, very clear that if one obeys Baba, inevitably, one will see him as he really is. And Baba was just making that very clear. There was no doubt in that room that that was going to happen. Of course, in my own mind, I had never been striving to see God as he really is. I was just trying to find a master and get my life together. And Baba was saying, you can experience things beyond your wildest dreams and your imagination by being connected with me, things you never could have thought were possible. And at that time, I became aware of something internally, which I don't know how to describe, but it was a presence, a reality, a being that was independent of me, had nothing to do with me, that I'd never been aware of before, which was so peaceful and so beautiful and so wonderful that it occurred to me that if one had consciousness of this, whatever it is internally, that you could suffer any suffering in life, endure any hardship, pass any test, and you would experience such inner peace and joy that what happened to you on the external level wouldn't matter. You could starve to death, be drawn and quartered, be shot in the war, that it wouldn't matter, that you would have this tremendous consciousness within that would light your days forever. I haven't experienced that outside of Baba's presence, but he did make me experience it and make me know that it is there, and that the things that he's talking about are all true. They're there, they're waiting for us when we're mature enough to be able to experience them and when we've learned enough spiritual lessons. So, at that time, that was the end of the interview. Baba called me over, he embraced me, he kissed me again, and I went out with Jal, and we went over. Walked around Pune, and I caught my train and went back and resumed my life. Now, all of the things that I've shared with you are things that I didn't realize when I walked. I didn't walk out of the door and realize all the things that I've shared with you. It took me many, many years to figure it all out, and I'm still working at it because I continually think of what Baba did and continue to learn lessons. He was so beautiful and so subtle and so wonderful that what Baba did remains a continual fountain that I can draw from to learn spiritual lessons in my daily life and to receive spiritual guidance from it. And far from being the innocent little chit-chat that I originally thought it was, I came out of the interview thinking, well, Baba's the most warm, beautiful, and loving individual that I've ever met. There obviously weren't any spiritual lessons in that. That as it was due to my own spiritual incapacity and lack of knowledge of Baba. I think Mara quoted, when I was last there, just summed it up very beautifully. When she quoted from Tukaram and then translated, he has a little couplet saying, The conversations with the master seem very innocent and very polite, but in those polite and innocent conversations is all the wisdom of the universe. Jay Baller.
Now I'd like to present Adi Kieran.
Jai Baba. This morning I would like to recite to you a very old prayer which Baba used to recite somewhere in the 20s in Manzile Mim. I remember when he lived upstairs of that Manzile Mim building, and only Gustaji was allowed to be there at night near Baba. Whole day, of course, I would go to him. The rest of all the Mandali were lodged on the ground floor of the house. And early morning at 4 o'clock, Baba used to descend the steps singing this prayer. I don't know, somehow or the other this prayer was lost sight of. I had remembered it. And before leaving India on this trip, I happened to go to Mehrazad, and Mehramai called me. And when I started reciting this prayer, she also remembered it. And she too recited the prayer, and she liked immensely. And it was exactly the same prayer which I knew that she knew. I shall first recite in Persian. It is the prayer, and then give you the meaning of it. Kibriyaye do jahan bichu bi misal bi zawal bi hamta parwardigar alam dar dargah hai to ay kareem kar saaz arzman hai bande nawaz ke ata farmaye ba man hai gunahgar in cheez ha khayal paak o guftar paak o kirdar paak ke bebinam tara wa beshanasam tara ba hadd kamal khuda Kibriyaye do jahan, O the glorious one of the two worlds. I have explained you the two worlds. The inner world is the world composed of the subtle and the mental world. Put together is called the inner world. And the outward world is the physical world, the gross world we know. The glorious one of the two worlds. Bi hamta, unequaled, matchless. Bi hamta, parvardigar alam, the protector of the whole world. Dar dargah hai to ay kareem kar saaz. O the giver of mercies, I am the protector of the slaves, the giver of mercies, I have a prayer to be placed on your feet or at the altar where you are. Dar dargah hai to kareem kar saaz arzman hai bande nawaz, that you may grant me the following things. What are the following things? Good thoughts, good words, good deeds, so that I may see you and I may feel you, I may see you to the extent of your perfection. That means I may realize you as you are. This is the prayer.
This morning, various people submitted some questions.
Yes, I know today is the time given for all questions. I have just begun with a small prayer, and perhaps you thought that I would continue. And so you... So you peremptorily kindly read the first question. Now, just a minute. Can you hear me all?
Yes.
I'm thankful. Now, if anybody has to ask questions and the floodlight is on my eyes and I'm not able to see somebody raising his hand, then if I'm inattentive, please shout, so that I will also shout and give a reply that you may hear it. Yes, the first question?
If Baba is everywhere and in everything, and Baba's presence can be felt here, why do we need to go to India? Is there anything special about Baba's tomb?
Yes, sir.
What is happening there?
What is happening there? What is happening there, the man should go and see with his own eyes. God is everywhere. Everybody says God is everywhere. All religions say God is everywhere. There is not a religion. There is not a saintly man. There is not an ordinary man. Excepting those communists, everyone says God is everywhere. Who says no? And Meher Baba says the same thing. One man comes to me and says, what is the new? Has Meher Baba taught us anything new? I said, God is not new. He's the same ancient one. How can he change the existence of God? He has to be the same. Now, God is everywhere. I do not much concern myself. God is everywhere. I do believe. I feel convinced that God is everywhere. But I am more concerned. Where is the point? Where is the place? Who is the personage? Which is the tomb? Which is the place from where I can get God? Not God is everywhere or everywhere not. Supposing I was brought up with the statement drilled into my ears that God is nowhere, it would have really made no difference. I must know, if God is everywhere, where is it that I can get him from? And if you ask me, in absence of Baba's bodily presence, it is his tomb alone. Do you know that the tomb of Muhammad, he was the avatar. Avatar is always the same. Baba is the same Muhammad, Christ, Rama, Krishna. All the previous avatars who were there were the self-same. No two avatars at all. At his tomb, millions of Muslims go. If they don't have money, they sell their house. They borrow money, pay heavy interest. I would like you to go and ask them questions. Why you do that? I do not know why this thought has got into them, or the importance of going to the tomb has been created in their heart, or probably it was evoked in their heart, or somebody told them, or maybe Muhammad himself during his lifetime may have made it very clear that after my dropping the body, it will be my tomb which will represent me. Now the importance of the tomb is too great. We all can talk about God and about samskaras and about wearing of the samskaras and diminishing the samskaras. All these things become very theoretical. It doesn't take us anywhere at all. It is our life. It is our actions, it is our movement, it is the love of heart in our God that counts, that make up, that contribute to us, that lift us up from where we are, nothing else. Now, the importance of the tomb is too great, as I say. It is only next to Baba's bodily presence. I shall give you an analogy. This is not exactly what Baba has explained me, as I tell you. Many things I interpret, give my interpretation. In the light of the experience I may have, different statements I may have heard from Baba, put together and conclusions drawn. Now when Baba was in the body, what was he? There were two aspects. One was his personal aspect, another was his impersonal aspect. And the personal aspect was centered, was focused in his own body, which was present, we could see with our physical eyes. That was his divine being. It is still there. It is not gone. It has only shifted its place. I will explain to you. Divine being is the one aspect. That is the personal aspect. Impersonal aspect is his divinity. It is everywhere, all over. But as I say, of what use to me, I do not know. I just say, repeatedly say, that divinity is everywhere. Somebody may get a glimpse here. Somebody may get a little inspiration there. But that doesn't mean that I am able to realize that divinity everywhere. It is focused in his personal aspect, in his body, when he is there in the body.